Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, estimating value of a corporation. This is formulas. Now, for heaven's sakes, write these down and just follow the steps that I give you, just like with the bonds. And as a matter of fact, this is actually a little bit more straightforward than the bonds. There's one little kink in it where you can make a mistake, and I will emphasize that. The funniest part of it is that I do an MBA version of this class, and I was just going through the PowerPoints that I give them that are provided by Cengage, and that kink, that mistake that can be made, they were making in the PowerPoints. It was just like, who is doing this? And so I'm going to be emphatic about that and emphasize it. But there is one good thing here, is that I have a fast, dirty trick way of getting this answer to what would otherwise be kind of a complicated formula. You're not supposed to do this with the TI calculator, but it actually works. So, but without further ado, here are the numbers. The market is grouchy today. It's not a horrible day, but as you can see, the Dow is down a little, the S&P is down a little more, and the NASDAQ is down the most. Kind of a classic pattern. Higher risk is taking you into deeper doo-doo on a day like this. Now, here's what's troubling. First of all, well, aside from the fact that the markets are having a grouchy day, and also notice, looking at the S&P 500 portfolio, I mean, that's not even a million. We're past the halfway point of the day. Typical volume on a day is close to $4 billion. We're all less than a billion right now, I should say. And so, this is really a quiet, defensive market. You're going to see that here in a minute. First of all, S&P, all the equities, their investors are getting out of equities. You can see it right here. And then crude is up there was a real run downward, and it bounced hard, but it's recovering. And so the good news is that, well, there's not good news. It's going up. The price of oil is going up, as we would expect it to under the circumstances. Now, the metals are down, and so investors are getting out of metals, and the 10-year bond yield is up. Oh, holy cow, 13 and a half basis points. So that's, in other words, the yield is up, price is down, investors are getting out of bonds. They're getting out of bonds, metals, and equities. In other words, they're pulling money out and putting it into straight-up cash under the mattress. That's defensive. That's definitely a defensive situation. And there's very light volume. Trading activity today is light. So all of that means that we're waiting for the next shoe to drop. There is a sense, it's almost like a wait and see. Are we going to have a bigger war in Eastern Europe, essentially the equivalent of a mini world war, or is it all going to calm down? It's difficult to call right now. There's a stalemate. It looks like the Russians have given up ground and they're being backed down, so that's good, except that I don't think the Russians are going to take that line down and they're going to go chemical, biological, or possibly nuclear. And then, well, do send me postcards from the combat zones. Now, if we look over here, London had started out the day bad, but it has been bouncing in positive territory, almost kangaroo style, not bear or bull, through the day. They're not quite finished yet. Now, the Nikkei just kind of flopped around all day. It wasn't really doing anything. It looks like they were in the same situation. I finally thought, well, why don't I check the volume on the Nikkei and on the FTSE and on a few other exchanges? Yeah, they're in the same situation. Volume is very light all over the world. There's just this wait and see among heavies across the planet right now, waiting to see what's going to come next. Now, the next part of this is, of course, looking at the yield curve. It's getting serious. I mean, it's not recovering. The yield curve, as we had seen before, starts out a couple of basis points of a drop from the 7 to 10. And then now it's gotten, we had 4 basis points, and then 4 basis point drop, and now we're up to a 5 basis point inversion at the 7-10-year leg. That is not good. That is unpleasant as all get out. So there's not going to be a recovery, even if the yield curve straightens back up. Once it inverts, you've got a recession coming, or at least a very strong economic pause. And in this situation, yeah, it's going to be serious. I'm getting more information questions on Twitter, on LinkedIn about this too, from some students who hadn't contacted me in a while, who are professionals in the business. I want to show you something kind of interesting here. It goes back to things that I've talked about earlier in the course: responsibility in your investments and diversifying your portfolio, all of that kind of stuff. There are all kinds of places. The world of social media is a dangerous place to be taking the advice they give or taking their facts at face value. Even sites that are supposedly reputable, like Wikipedia, are highly, highly disreputable in the academic world and in the professional world, too. But there on Twitter, I have a minor presence on Twitter. Here comes a company that's called SECFI, SECFI. Now, that in itself is a little bit suspicious, that a company that uses SEC in its name is being allowed to conduct business. Back in the day, that would have been shut down. A company with that name would have been shut down by the SEC very quickly. But here's a company that's on Twitter selling its investment advisory services. And they came across my news feed in Twitter's algo. They thought, oh, there's a finance professor. We'll put this ad for this SECFI in his news stream. That was a mistake. Let me show you the ad. And this is a cautionary tale. Be wary of putting things on social media where I can eat your lunch. Here's this, SECFI. Equity is confusing, but it doesn't have to be. We can help. This is SECFI. This is my first time with stock options. I'm excited but nervous. I want to get this right for me and my family. Really? For you and your family, you are going to take on derivatives? Are you on crack? Well, the first time I wrote this, I wrote my comment to them, and Twitter, their bot cautioned me, you shouldn't talk like that to people. So I changed my language a little bit. I'm definitely okay, look. Yes, I channeled Samuel Jackson. But, I mean, I am definitely doing a screen capture of this to show my finance students who endure my ceaseless rants about appropriateness of investments. Specifically, with respect to what you're advertising, I will tell them exactly how irresponsible your craven marketing is. Now, the original post comment had a comment, comma, you dumb MFs. And I didn't abbreviate MF in there. So, let's start with a couple of things. First of all, writing as like you have an eighth grader's capacity to write grammatically. Second of all, you are telling a person who has a family that options are a good idea. Are you nuts? Options, that's like saying, all right, kids, why don't you play in the furnace for a while? Daddy's going to be up here preparing some side dishes for when you're properly cooked. And then there was another interesting thing about this, too, is that they use the word equity here. Equity, going to today's lecture, is stocks. Equity is ownership in a corporation. But then the ad copy is about options, which are not equity. They are the derivative, the take the riskiest part you could of a stock price movement and carve that off and put that in the hands of professionals and idiots who want to give up their lunch money. That's what options are. They are not equity. So this whole thing was a cluster F from beginning to end. Bad stuff to put up. Now, the interesting thing was, I put this up on LinkedIn for my students who follow me there to see me ranting and raving, and I gave some lectures about the issues. One, you're professionals, write professionally. Two, don't recommend derivatives to people who are looking for family investments for their family's future. Third, don't think you are calling stock options, derivatives, equity, which is absolutely false. That's bordering on a material misstatement of fact. And that would be a filing of a complaint with the SEC. Well, I went there this morning to get that Twitter post so I could show you the original one. They took it down. It's gone. They also blocked my ass, too. Seems some people just don't want to take constructive criticism. But the good news is Twitter hasn't put me in Twitmo, which they probably would have with my original comment. But the lessons are this. One, don't take advice from these places. For God's sake, this is standard stuff on the internet. And Twitter doesn't, the people who run Twitter, they don't know their asses from holes in the ground. Quite honestly, they're looking for naughty things. They're looking for people who are violating social norms of our day and all that. They're not going to protect you from this kind of scam, con artist, cat strangler, dog beater, and avocado brain. So do be careful about what you do on the internet, look at on the internet. Don't believe, and also another thing is be as careful as possible, even about places like Reddit. I know a group that is setting up to make themselves look like experts so that they can set people up, make them have confidence in them, and then take them on the big scam. And am I going to stop them? No. I believe in cleaning out the cesspool of fools. So anyway, there you go. Now, that's all I'm going to do about bitching about something like that, but do appreciate that it's a dangerous world out there. We're going to talk about ethics in a couple of weeks here, and I'm going to go back to this kind of behavior and how you protect yourself and how you be a good person in an ungood world, because too many bad guys win, and I want to see if I can keep my tribe from falling into those traps. Let me get down to what we're doing today. You know, you, sir, you have a bad past. I mean, it's really grim, some of the things that happened over the past years of your life. You haven't made much money either. I mean, yeah, there was that one house sitting thing you did, and you made money by holding mosh pits and parties in there when the people were away. But you see, the thing is, though, that in our business, we can't care about the past of a company. All we can do to find the value at this time is look at the present value of the future expected cash flows. That's the only thing that matters to us at all. The problem with that is that that's the future, and the future is not clear. If it were, my future would probably make me want to shoot myself right now. But the way that is very strong, but it's also highly speculative, even though we use best practices and the closest we can come to science in approaching it, would be this enterprise valuation model. On its face, it's not all that bad. All you're going to do is take the present value of the future expected free cash flows. That's all you're going to do. Is, in other words, the enterprise value would simply be the free cash flow one period out, discounted one period, plus the free cash flow, two periods out, times one plus the weighted average cost of capital to the second power, et cetera. And ideally, you'd go out to infinity with this, but we're not going to be that stupid. The truth of the matter is that once you get about 20 to 30 years out, most cash flows are going to have a discounted value that's not worth worrying too much about. So we might have some free cash flow at period N over 1 plus the weighted average cost of capital to the nth power, and then just say that's enough, no more. We'll just take it that far. And then we, in other words, these present values, we just back to the present. There's your value of your corporation. Divided by the number of shares outstanding, and there is your intrinsic value per share. Nothing really complicated about that. Now, I do want to point out, and I've written this before, and I want to do it one more time for you. Free cash flow would be the operating income minus the taxes on that, 1 minus T. Now, you notice that accountants would say, well, you've still got to subtract the interest expense. No, because the interest expense is essentially a locked-in. It's gone. It's not operating. It does not have anything to do with the operations of the company. So we stop at operating income. Now, this is the same as saying EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, but we don't worry about the interest. All we do is just say, this is pre-tax right here. Take the taxes out, 1 minus T, okay? Now, the one thing we'll have to do is add back the depreciation because that was not an operating expense. It's in operating income. We subtracted it out, but we allow that because it's going to create a tax shield. It's non-cash flow, but it creates a real tax shield. So we leave it in there, but eventually, ultimately, we'll have to add it back in because it really didn't happen. We never wrote a check to depreciation expense. Now, there are two other pieces that we're going to have to deal with, too. We're going to have to subtract out the capital expenditures, what we really spent on big equipment, the actual money that came out of our pockets for that. And then finally, and this was that pain in the butt I showed you before, the change in net operating working capital. In other words, did our net working capital absorb cash or did it free up cash? And I had already gone through that with you once, so I'll save you the pain of that one again. So the problem here is, we would have to project this for 10 years, maybe, 15 years. And that's where the pain comes in. Now, this is done, and actually, as I had told you before, this is what we call advanced financial modeling, is actually doing that painful exercise there. And that was the whole subject, as I had told you before, these delegations from other countries in West Africa and the islands come here for me to show them how to do these free cash flow projections. Now, a dirty secret. There's a fast way to do it. Once you've gotten the projection for 1 year, then you just sort of say, okay, there's some magic about growth rate, and these free cash flows out here are just growth of this one. We apply growth rate to the free cash flow. That's a quick, dirty way to do it. Is it good? Technically, no. But in practice, my experience has been that if you can get free cash flow for period one, project it out, revenues next year minus costs next year, that kind of thing, and then say, okay, we get down to free cash flow for that year one, and then say, this free cash flow will grow at some constant rate like 5%, 3%, whatever. Actually, it works in practice. You get a number that pretty much is not too much off what actually happens when you go back and look at the whole thing in retrospect. So there's that way of doing it. Now, you get this, enterprise value right here. This is the value of the whole firm's equity. And then what you can do is take that enterprise value divided by the number of shares outstanding. And that's your intrinsic price per share. This is kind of the meat of advanced financial modeling. And the one that they'll give you in the homework is they're going to feed you the numbers so that you're not killing yourself on it too much. Now let's get down to another model here. I mentioned growth rate. This is kind of an important thing because I've said this before and I'll do this one again. When I was consulting for small companies, there came a time when they would say, well, should we start paying a dividend? And the answer is kind of complicated. I say, okay, once you start paying a dividend, your stockholders are going to expect that dividend to continue. The Wall Street boys are going to celebrate because it makes our job for valuing your company somewhat easier, and we have more of an assurance that at least we'll make something out of the company, even if the stock price doesn't go up very well, at least we get a dividend. So yeah, dividends are a good thing, but you've got to make sure that once you start them, you're committed to keeping it going. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to have the same dividend every year. It's probably going to be turbulent for a few years, but once you start doing it, you got to keep doing it in one way or another. Otherwise, you say, well, we've stopped paying dividends, and we don't know if we'll ever pay a dividend again. Your stock price is going to crater doing that kind of stuff. You, madam, are my daughter. No, don't kill yourself, for heaven's sake. But, I mean, next year I give you a $100 check for Christmas. Well, then you're going to really like your daddy after that, and you'll send me cards, and you'll show up for Christmas to eat my very bad food and all that. So I want to make sure that you keep coming back, so I will keep giving you that $100. I stop giving it to you, you're going to start going on these talk shows and telling what an awful man I was, okay? So I want to keep that up. And that's the way it is with companies, too. Let me go through this. There is a model. An older company, has two goals. One, keep the dividend going, and two, have a growth rate of the dividend. Those are generally the two rules that an older company wants to follow. Now, I talked about this for a long time. Will you shut up? Good God, I thought I had one of those apps that shut this thing off at certain times. It's not working. But anyway, where the hell was... Oh. Old companies, and I had been teaching this for years. Well, an old company has a constant growth rate of its dividend. And I actually didn't really ever check that until maybe about 5 years ago. And I went through a bunch of older, more stable companies, Ford, actually I even did Target, and U.S. Steel and companies like that. And I compared their dividend year to year. Year one divided by this year's, year two divided by year one, year three divided by year two, to see if that growth rate really was stable. And I'll be darned if it was. In almost every case. Now, it wasn't perfect, the same number every year, but you could see that there was a dividend growth policy. One company, I think, was it Target? I can't remember. One of them, obviously, every year they were targeting about a 2% growth in the dividend. Another one, it was about 1.25%, but it seemed to be the same over a number of years. That growth rate, they really do try to level out the growth rate. So if you have a company like that where the growth rate is constant, then we can say that the value of the corporation per share, well, actually, let me do it this way. The price per share of the corporation right now is going to be the present value of the future dividends. And we actually have a formula if there is an infinite stream of constant growth dividends. We have a formula for it. It is the dividend one period out divided by the discount rate, we'll put it WACC for lack of more creativity, minus G. And that is a formula that tells us the sum of the infinite stream of annual dividends brought back to now. Notice that you need to use D1. So if I, here's how it'll work on a test or a quiz. If I say the dividend next year will be, then you've already got the D1. Just put it in. But if I say the company just paid a dividend that is expected to grow by some amount, then you take that D0 and you grow it one period to get D1. Again, let me emphasize this. If I say the dividend next year will be, then just use the D1. Just use that. That is D1. But if I say the company just paid a dividend of that's expected to grow by a certain amount, then you use D0 times 1 plus G to get the D1, okay? But make sure you know this. On a timeline, here's 0. Here's 1, here's 2, here's 3, here's 4, etc. And I give you the dividends, or you can, whatever they are. This method brings you this value. So if I tell you a D0, that doesn't play in. It's included in D1. Don't ever let me trick you with a D0. You don't use it unless you have to get D1. But on its own, it has no purpose. This is important because here's what oftentimes actually happens. You'll get unstable dividends for a few years. They'll be up and down. They might even be 0 one year. You'll get an unstable dividend. But then I might say the dividend in year 5 was 50 cents, and that is expected to grow thereafter at 3%. So in other words, let me give you some numbers here. We'll do one now. A company is going to have dividends of 25 cents in year 1. It's going to up the dividend to 60 cents in year 2. In year 3, it could not pay a dividend, but in year 4, it came back with a dividend of 40 cents. In year 5, the dividend was 50 cents, and it's expected to grow after that at 4%. Let's say the weighted average cost of capital is 9%. Now, what you're going to do to get the value of this company, you're going to get the present value of the 25 cents 1 year out, plus the present value 2 years out of 60 cents, the present value 3 years out of 0, the present value 4 years out of 40 cents, but you don't use this 50 cents. You don't use it. You get the 50 cents grown one period. That'll give you year 6. And then you find the price at year 5 is going to be 50 cents grown 4% divided by 0.09 minus 0.04. That number right there, let me run that real quick for you. Let me run that real quick for you. Now, bear with me here. I'm going to show you something in a minute that'll make this look a little bit more sensible. 0.5 times 1.04. Now, we're going to divide that by 0.09 minus 0.04. That is the price of the stock at year five. That's the price of the stock at year five. That number, that $10.40, is called the horizon value. It's called the horizon value. It is the price of the stock at the year when the dividend stabilizes in growth. Again, now, the next thing is, okay, we've got to get the present value of 0.25 plus the present value of 0.60 plus the present value of 0, all that, plus the present value at year 5 of $10.40. Pain in the butt, right? I'll show you a trick. Watch. You're not supposed to do this with this formula. But it works. It is fine. We'll use the formula for its intended purpose a little later. Apps, finance, go down here to this NPV, number 7. Hit enter. Now, once you get that up, the first thing that you should do is give it the interest rate, the 9%. Now, put in a comma and put in a negative 0. Don't ask me why, just do that. You'll see why when we get to using this formula legit. But for now, just put in a 0 and put a comma. Now, the next thing you're going to do is open a brace. Second parenthesis. This is where you can make your mistake in this. It's so easy to, on LCD screens, it's so hard to tell the difference between a parenthesis and a brace. And I do it. I've had students come up to me in the middle of quizzes and exams and they were literally shaking. Why is this coming up with an error? And I was like, I don't see it. And then I realized, oh, that's a parenthesis instead of a brace. That brace is telling the TI, here comes a cash flow. Here comes a cash flow of some kind. You're announcing it. Don't forget the comma before. Now I'm going to put in, okay, 0.25, comma, what was that next one? 0.60, comma, 0, comma, 0.4, comma. By the way, put in that 0 because it's holding. These are pulling place value by year. See, if you don't put in that, if you say, well, it's a 0, why do I put it in? Because you're telling it that that is the placeholder for year 3. And then the last one, the $10.40 out there at the horizon. This is a, yeah. No. I'm glad you asked that. No, you leave it alone because the 10.40 is actually carrying that 0.5, that 50 cents. It's actually in there embedded. That was what the mistake was in those PowerPoints that were in that MBA version of the course. They were putting the year 5 in as part of the formula, and it's not. You don't put it in there. I sent a message to the representative, and I said, can you convey this message to the people who do those PowerPoints? Here's the message. You dumbass. And he said, I'm not going to say it that way. I said, you say it that way. I want my reputation intact. Close the brace. This tells the calculator we're done with those cash flows. Close the parenthesis. We're so over this problem. Now, I want you to imagine doing this by hand, finding each present value. Instead, you can do it this way and say, the stock's intrinsic value is $7.78 per share. That's it. That's it. Want to see another one? Watch. And I write this in some kind of narrative. Just ignore the words. Get the stupid numbers out. Okay. Year 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Let's say that the company doesn't pay a dividend for 2 years. But then it starts, the company has said, okay, in year 3, it sends to its shareholders, we're not going to be able to pay a dividend for the next 2 years, but in year 3, we're projecting that we'll be able to pay a dividend of $1 a share. Then in year 4, we project that we can probably bring that up to $1.50. And then we're going to have some breathing room because we're going to need all of our we're going to need to use all of our earnings for our big growth that we're doing. So we're not going to be able to pay a dividend in year 5, but then we're going to get a dividend going in year 6 again. And at that time, we are projecting that we will be able to grow that dividend ever after that at a rate of 5%. Now, the weighted average cost of capital for this company, we're going to take at 11%. So, in other words, the dividend in year 6 is going to be $2 times 1 plus 0.05. Remember, it's always the D1 that gets you back to D0. It's the D7 that gets you back to D6. Over there, it was the D6 that got us back to D5. That $2 will never show up after you use it in the calculation. Now we're going to just do this on the calculator in one stroke. Well, a bunch of keystrokes, I should say. But okay, we're going to go apps, finance, TVM solver. Oh, TVM solver, you dumbass. Sorry. Apps, finance, NPV. Now remember, the first thing you're going to put in as a percentage, because it's an app, you put in the percents, is 11%. That's our discount rate. Comma, -0, comma. Now you're going to say open braces because you're telling the calculator, here comes the cash flow. The braces are the announcement. The calculator's algorithm sees the brace and says, okay, now we start doing present values. So the first year would be 0, no dividend. The second year would be 0 and no dividend. And this can get really confusing. Make sure you get those commas in there. And the third year would be $1. The fourth year would be $1.50. The fifth year, again, no dividend. Comma, now we need the horizon value. You can do that right in there. You can just do it in there. All you would say is, okay, take the dividend in year 5, grow it one period, and then divide it by, open parentheses, weighted average cost of capital minus the growth rate. Yeah, I got it. I think. Uh-oh. Okay, now here's where that. Look, you saw me do it actually calculated externally, the horizon value the last time. This time I did it internally, and I almost forgot to put in the brace. Close the brace to say we're done, and then close the parenthesis. Let me emphasize what I just did there. I did the stream of dividends in the starting the braces out with the stream of dividends. But the last dividend that I did, I didn't do it. I did the horizon value. and I did it inside of the calculation. Just, I could have done it on the outside and put the number in. It wouldn't have mattered. Now, $20.43 is the intrinsic value of the stock per share. That's all there was to it. It's really not complicated. You just have to make sure you do the steps just the same way every time. And that's where it can get to be a little complicated if you make a mistake in here. And most likely, if you make a mistake, it's going to error. It's going to flag, you know, something's wrong here. So that's a good thing, is that you'll know that you've made a mistake. And I don't know, it's up to you whether you want to calculate this horizon value externally and put it in as a single number, or if you want to do it the formula right inside of the app, the NPV app. It's up to you whichever way you want to do it. But if it doesn't do an error on you, you at least have a little bit of sense that, well, maybe I did it right. Now, growth rate. Growth rate is a difficult animal. If you see, in this company, they had given us a statement. They anticipated that they would stabilize the dividend at 5%. That's a problem because companies might not want to commit to something like that. In the case of the companies that I've dealt with and that I'm dealing with in other countries, finding the value is a very difficult thing because oftentimes they're probably not going to have dividends for a long time. And how do I know the growth rate? For heaven's sake, how do I know the growth rate? What? I mean, these are young, highly speculative companies that could actually explode in growth, but they could also fizzle in a day or in one change of government policy or whatever. So where do we get a growth rate if we don't have a growth rate or we don't have a good projection, a good place to start? This formula, if it works, it's great. If it doesn't work, it gives you really stupid answers. There's a way to estimate the growth rate. It is approximately equal to the payout, the retention rate times the return on equity of the company, the ROE, which is the same as saying 1 minus the payout rate times the ROE. Well, how the hell would you know what the payout rate is on a company? Well, actually, it's not that hard to do. Look at this. I'm going to pull up Yahoo again. Let me pull up a company like Ford. Ford has a forward dividend of 40 cents per share on earnings of $4.45. So its payout rate is 40 cents of $4.45. In other words, for every $4.45 it earns for the shareholders, it pays 40 cents of it out. So in other words, 1 minus that would be the number you use for the retention rate. And then you times it by the company's ROE, and you've got an estimate. It's a pig's eye estimate, but it's all we got of the growth rate of the company. And you can do this for almost any company, and I'll tell you this right now. For big, old companies, this formula actually doesn't work. For younger companies, it's damn good. And I can't tell you why it doesn't work for old companies, but it does for young companies. It's a good way to estimate the growth rate of a young company. And then you're back in the territory of the dividend growth model. Let me show you here, as a matter of fact. So what I would do is, let me go over here, find Ford's ROE. this is a bad place to look for it. It's 45.10%. Now, you're going to see that it's the number comes out ridiculous. Ford's an old company. This isn't going to work very well for an old company. So, in other words, I would do 1 minus 40 cents over 4.45 times a 45. What was that? What was their ROE? 45.10%. That's a staggering. By the way, that's an insane ROE for a company like Ford. I mean, that's like, holy cow. ROEs, I mean, I'm impressed by an ROE that's 30%. But as you can see, what's going to happen is you're going to get a growth rate that just doesn't make any sense for a company like Ford. One minus the payout rate, 0.40 divided by $4.45, times 45.1%. There's no way its growth is 41%. There's no way. That's just insane. Like I said, this way of estimating the growth, and they show you this in the book, but this way of estimating the growth rate ain't going to work for old companies. For young companies, surprisingly, it does work pretty darned well for a young company. So in other words, a company that does not pay any dividend. Think about this. If a company is not paying any dividend, in other words, it's plowing all of its earnings back into the company, one minus the payout rate would be zero. One minus zero is one. So one times the ROE is the ROE. So what it's saying is that the growth rate of the company is the return on equity of the company, which actually kind of makes sense, like, you know, I guess. But anyway, for old companies, no. For young companies that have very low payout rates or no payout rates, yeah, it actually isn't that bad. Let me do one more thing here. The book gives you a couple of alternatives for finding value of equity. Now, the obvious one is just look at the market cap, for heaven's sakes. Look at the market cap. But if we want to look a little deeper in there, a company has a book value. Yeah. And I'm going to pull up Ford here real quick, just to use Ford for my example. Ford Motor. Let's try that again. And I'll look at their, quickly look at their 10K, latest filing, very quickly here. Here's the book's idea. What you do is you take the market to book and take the market value minus the book value. That is the market value added. That's what they say. And it's just sitting here looking at me stupid. But if I could get it to come up here in this last minute, is there some reason why the internet sucks all the time? Whatever. Okay. Market value minus book value, that's something the book says is a good measure of the company's value. Anyway, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.